Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush, Friday interview edition, the last one. Oh, everybody, it makes me so sad. This will be the last regular weekly Friday interview edition for Movie Crush. I do already have a guest lined up for August, and maybe I'll try and put out like one a month or something, but this is going to be the last one, and we are going to finish like we started with my friend, the great Janet Varney. She's wonderful. She's funny. She's kind, and she is supportive, and she is encouraging, and she's super talented, and she's just the best. And so Janet agreed to come back to kind of bookend Movie Crush and talk about Spirited Away. We get into some anime talk here. It's all new to me, but it's something that Janet knows quite a bit more than I do about, because she voiced Korra. And any fans of Korra know that that's Janet's voice there. So we talk about that a little bit. We talk about her new podcast project where she talks anime and Korra, and among other things. And we talk about Spirited Away. And it was a great talk with my old friend. And we also talk a little bit about the show ending. It's a very bittersweet episode, you guys. So I hope you enjoy it. So here we go with Janet Varney on Spirited Away. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I feel like my voice has gotten less shrill when I answer that question, which is a good sign, you know? Okay. Like the higher, I don't know if that's true for you or other people you know, but I do feel higher, like
the
more
worse off you are.
Yeah, the more people are like, "How are you doing?" You're like, "I mean, I'm pretty good." I feel like right. That's a dead
You're
giveaway.
You're really struggling.
It's a dead giveaway. Unfortunately, I also use that voice comedically. So maybe it's a little confusing, but usually when someone sincerely asks me how I am, if I'm up in that register, I'm hiding a lot. There's a lot of deep pain that has right. Pushed. The pain has pushed so high up in my body that my vocal cords have been condensed just a tiny whistle of a noise. Yeah. How about you?
I'm great. Fantastic.
Oh shit, we are in trouble. This is going to be a rough ride.
You look great. I like your pink hair.
Thank you.
It's good.
Thanks. I really like it, and I feel like people are nicer to me when I have pink hair, and I don't feel okay. Like people are not nice to me in general. They are all people are nice, but sure. There's something about my experience of having pink hair is that when people see you from afar, they've already decided that you're fun. Playful.
Uh-huh. Right.
Maybe that you have a little bit of a, like, it's a little punk rock, but it's like also when you see what I wear, it's like I'm wearing a child's t-shirt basically. So it's right. Not like I'm like, I don't have like a, you know what I mean? I don't have like, I wish I had a sleeve. I would be so cool if I had a tattoo sleeve. But so when you put all those things together, I feel like any initial meeting with people, I feel that the niceness and familiarity level is vastly improved from when I just have like blonde hair or whatever.
I only wish now that you had duped me with fake tattoo sleeves.
Oh, it'd be so cool.
Because I would be, and you were just like cool about it or whatever, because yeah. I would swear to God, I would sit here and the first thing that I would think is, have I ever seen Janet's arms before? I feel like I've seen her arms before. Why have I not seen her? Why did I not know that she had tattoo sleeves?
God, that'd be, I mean, I really understand the level of, like, when you start realizing that you're getting so old that you don't really want to maintain yourself in a certain way for acting jobs. Like, that is, you know, there really starts to be this sense of, like, I just, you know, I just don't care. I don't care and they'll have to work around it or whatever. And there's something very liberating about that. But it's also like, or is that just you're accepting that you're going to go into your retirement from that business? Because,
right,
you know, I don't know that all of a sudden people are going to turn around and be like, you know what? I love your sleeve. Yeah, we're going to start giving you sleeve rolls.
I just turned 50 a couple of months ago, Janet. So,
oh, I know.
That's a big one.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
I said happy birthday day of. I don't know. Let the record show I said it day of.
You did. I was just recording with John Hodgman, actually literally 80 seconds before you jumped on. And he said he was talking about you with someone else about something like a role. And he said, well, why not Janet? And then he said he realized that's a great sitcom starring you called Why Not Janet? And he said, it's up to you now, me, to go pitch this to you, come up with a premise. And then that's the show.
It feels like, I wish that WandaVision hadn't, all due respect to WandaVision, which I wasn't maybe not a huge fan of, but but they worked real hard on it. And there was a lot about it that I appreciated. But that had they not just recently revisited the sort of old timey sitcom, I would say Why Not Janet definitely seems like it was, you know, competing. And I use that term loosely because no one had ever heard of it, but it was competing against Mary Tyler Moore.
Right.
You know, but no one was watching it because Mary Tyler Moore was a great show.
I guess the premise would be someone like the character Janet would be someone who is a jack of all trades and kind of like pretty good at everything.
Okay. All right.
So anytime something comes up, they go, oh, why not Janet? She's
somehow
pretty good
I'm
at that.
Insulted. Somehow. Wait,
maybe because
I'm
saying you're mediocre. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I don't have to think about this that hard. I fully know why that's insulting.
It's a TV show. It's fiction.
This is all well and good. I need to go because I got to call Hodgman and find out if I have a chance at whatever this thing is. I got to get and if a sleeve is going to be a problem because I have a lot of work I got to get done on my arm as well.
So in your mind, the rewrite is the show is called, of course, it's Janet.
Yeah.
Or it's got to be Janet.
Got to be empirically
Janet. Or bust?
Janet. Objectively Janet.
That sounds like a little indie movie all of a sudden.
Here's the thing. Why not Janet? Sure, that's fine. Maybe that's season one. But how do you keep it fresh? Throw a comma in there. Why not Janet? And that's the next season is about her taking chances that she wouldn't ordinarily take, living a little larger. You know what I mean? Take a chance. Why not, Janet?
And then it could just be, why? Question mark. And then not Janet! Exclamation point. Don't even know what that means.
I'm just going to move the comma again and say, why not Janet? But then that doesn't really, yours was better. I mean, it was terrible, but it was still better than why, comma, not Janet. That does not.
Well, I think this is all about beating the dead horse anyway, and we've done that. What is that
You're
background
right.
you've got there? Is that real or is that?
No, this is just a tapestry. I mean, yes, I realize that are you in the mountains? Are you in the mountains?
I wondered if it was blue screen.
It's not a blue screen. It is
an actual
tapestry.
That's nice.
Yeah, I got a bunch of these. Society 6. It's just a place where you can get various and sundry goods that are being produced as, you know, pillows, artworks, floor mats, and tapestry is among the options. Do a little landscape photography filter, and I now have a curtain next to one of these is hung next to our bed that's like a desert, you know, Sonoran desert, looks like where I'm from, Tucson, storm clouds over saguaros, very pleasant. It turned out to be a real, like everything I've done, I think, during the pandemic, and also every dream I've had during the pandemic has been like transparently, like textbook, embarrassingly A to B. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had a dream. I was telling my therapist, I had a dream about, I think I'm having some like, reintegration anxiety, reopening, all that. And then on a separate subject later in therapy, I was complaining about a disturbing dream I'd had. And as I was saying, and then all of a sudden I was in like, it was almost like a fabric womb. And I was like trying to get out of the hole. She was like, I wonder what very direct short line we could draw to another part of the conversation we've had. I was like, God damn it. Everything I do is like, just teach it in
the nose.
In pre-cal. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's so that's fabric tapestries that represent places I'm not traveling during the pandemic. It's just so like, yeah, okay, sure. Super creative, Janet. Great job.
Those are kind of fun, though. I've had those dreams. I had one when I moved to New Jersey from college, and I moved because my roommate in college. His parents were these, you know, had like corporate CEO types that had the this big house in New Jersey, and they were getting transferred to Australia. And they said, why don't you come up here and live for a few years rent free? And so I followed him up there. But there was also, I hate to say this, it was a girl I was trying to get away from.
Oh, in college. Yeah.
There was it wasn't like stalker territory, but it was just it had gotten a little weird.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, perfect time to move to New Jersey. So I moved to New Jersey, and literally maybe the first night or two that I was there, I had this dream that there was a bear that like came out of the woods in a dress and beat down the door of the house and was chasing me around the house to kill me. And I woke up and I was like, I wonder who the bear was.
That's amazing. And it does not help that her name was Stephanie Grizzle.
Right.
She made it so easy.
If only. So I want to talk a little bit about the new project that you've been working on, because it kind of takes us into the movie that we'll discuss.
Sure.
I want to hear all about it.
Well, so it is I always feel like hesitant to say it's a rewatch podcast, because that's kind of not really how I pitched it to Nickelodeon, but mm-hmm. certainly that is something that Dante Bosco and I are doing together, which is, you know, it's not like a watch along where, you know, you have to synchronize it and listen, which I guess there are some that do that, but uh-huh. you know, it's you know, we talk about everything that's happening in each episode of Avatar: The Last Airbender to start, but Nickelodeon's intention is for us to do that with, you know, all three seasons of Avatar and then all four seasons of Korra, and then sort of if we can, and if it's doing well enough, like to just sort of always be doing this, because there are all these, you know, Avatar books and comics and Avatar Studios, which Mike DiMartino and Brian Konietzko have founded and is living under the umbrella of Nickelodeon, where they get to sort of make a jillion projects over the next, like, seriously, I think it's like 20 years as they kind of grow out this universe. You know, I'm such a fan of them and would be a fan if I had nothing to do with the shows. So having any kind of credibility at all to talk about doing the show with Nickelodeon and have them get excited about it. And then we brought Dante on, who plays Prince Zuko in Avatar: The Last Airbender, and General Iroh in The Legend of Korra, and is a friend of mine who I've done many cons with and really love being with. And we're very, very different. It's a great dynamic, and it's been so fun. We've recorded, I want to say we probably recorded like 16 episodes, but we've just now launched last week and have released three. So it's that space of like, well, I hope people like what we've done, because we've already done all of those, and we're not going to go back and change them. So,
well, I'm sure they will.
But so far, so good.
Let's back up a little bit. Like, where were you situated when it comes to these original The Last Airbender and stuff like that? Like, were you a big fan? Was this something you had always been into? And is like that, was that the seed of it all?
Yeah, well, so when I auditioned for The Legend of Korra, I was a fan of The Last Airbender. I was a fan of Avatar, but was a recent fan of it. I came to it as an adult, just through so many friends of mine who were like, you have to watch a show. And then as I was watching it, this audition came through for the sequel series, and I was so freaked out that I tried to emotionally separate myself from it. I actually had the thought like, oh, I wish I didn't know how great this is, because I know how great this second series is probably going to be. And I put the kibosh on watching it until I was fairly confident that I had not gotten a part on The Legend of Korra, because it takes so long to find out for some animation projects. I'm not sure why, but for some reason, the casting process for animation just tends to be much more, it's like luxuriously long.
Long are we talking here?
I mean, I want to say, and I'll have to ask, I mean, the guys won't remember, but maybe like Nickelodeon casting will. I feel like months and months passed. I mean, I really felt like, I feel like it was a long period of time from when I did the very first audition to when I remember when I got a callback. I said the words like, oh, that's not cast yet.
Right.
And then from that to like a chemistry test again, I was like, wait a minute. I have long since thought this job went to someone else. And then And so that, and whereas with casting in live action, for the most part, you know, it's like, we're shooting next week. There's right. a lot of kind of like, this is the last piece is uh-huh. finding this person. And then we immediately start shooting. And so I had returned to The Last Airbender, and then I found out I got the job. And just lost my mind. Yeah, completely lost my mind, and then was immediately terrified, as we've been trained to be in Hollywood. And like, how can this go wrong? When will I be right. fired? This is too good to be true. All of that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And so I absolutely love it. And it has been, it's just been a great opportunity. When it dropped on Netflix, and both shows dropped last summer during the pandemic on Netflix, and immediately just were at the top of Netflix charts.
Is that what
I don't
happened?
Even know what that means, but yeah, they were just sort of consistently like, oh, this is, you know, in all over the world,
right.
On Netflix, these two shows were, yeah. And so I thought, cause I had talked about doing something like this because I do have a lot of experience in podcasting, having done the JV Club for over nine years, and
yay.
Thank you. That's the first time a smattering of applause has really felt fantastic. That was a real situation where a few years ago I thought, wow, if I could combine those two things and get mm-hmm. to do something kind of meta about these shows, I would love that. And I had mentioned it to Mike and Brian, but they were sort of off starting the Netflix live action thing.
Right.
And that was sort of, it was like nebulous because it was like, well, yes, they have a relationship to Nickelodeon, but now they're working on this other thing and Nickelodeon hadn't licensed. Like, it's just all that sort of, where does this belong kind of conversation? And, but when it landed on Netflix, I was like, I'm going to have to try and pursue this again. And so I did reach out this time to Nickelodeon, and the timing was right for them as well. And they were like, yeah, we absolutely want to do this. We're building, you know, out our podcasting world. And so I've been working on it for a really long time. It's been, mm-hmm. you know, like almost a year. And it's just been amazing. It's just a show that both shows are, you know, there's just nothing about it that feels like limited or,
uh-huh.
you know, I mean, yeah, like there's also a SpongeBob SquarePants podcast. I love everyone who did SpongeBob. I love the host. I love Nickelodeon. They are a treasure to work with, at least in my personal experience. I don't know how I would do a podcast about SpongeBob. Like, I'm not
right.
sure what I would, and I'm sure tonally they're very different. But with uh-huh. Avatar: The Last Airbender, we're talking about, you know, we're laughing and talking about like the silly, childlike, adorable stuff. We're talking about the quality of animation, but we're also talking about, you know, genocide and,
right.
you know, children having more responsibility than they're ready for, and, you know, parental, frankly, abuse. And, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. it's very, very dense. There's a lot yeah. of layers to it. And so it's just not something I've ever gotten tired of watching or thinking about. And that's borne out in doing the podcast. It's a blast.
That's awesome. So this all makes sense to me now. I purposely didn't like look into a bunch of stuff. I know you've been posting a lot of stuff on your social meds. And I was like purposely like, oh, I don't want to know what's going on, because I just want to talk to Janet about it in person. So I get it now. Are you going episode by episode? Is it one of those?
We are, but for example, there's at least 40 episodes to the first season of our podcast, and there are only uh-huh. 20 episodes of the first season of The Last Airbender. So the three episodes we've released so far, we started, yes, with the very first episode, which is called The Boy uh-huh. and the Iceberg. We started with episode one, and we recapped that. We also talked about kind of what our own experiences were working on the shows and what to expect from the podcast.
Right.
But then the very next one is a sort of deep dive conversation with Mike and Brian, who created the show,
right.
talking to them about the mythology, about their relationship, how they met at RISD.
So cool.
And then that conversation went on so long that it's a two-parter. So that just got released. And then the next episode that's coming out next Tuesday is us recapping episode two. And then we have episodes where
gotcha.
We're just hanging with cast members
uh-huh.
And interviewing them and talking about stuff. We're talking to, you know, like, let's talk about the martial arts techniques. Let's talk about this South Korean animation with an animator. Let's talk about the music composition, because the fan base, my experience with them has always been that they have a really, really deep interest and appreciation for the craft of the making of the show.
Sure.
Opposed to maybe, you know, I'm sure there are some fandoms that are more about, like, you know, this funny thing happens on the show, or I want to, That's right. So there's that. And again, that feels unlimited. Like, we're having a problem that we have so many people that we wanted to fit into the season that we're having a, we're like, oh no, we're not going to have enough episodes. Can we, maybe we can add some more? And, you know, it's great. It's great to nerd out on.
That's awesome. What is it about voice work for you? Is it your kind of, I don't want to say favorite kind of work to do. I know, you know, a lot of actors talk about how great it is to just go in there in your sweatpants and not have to go through hair and makeup and all that stuff.
I don't think I've ever in a single recording seen anyone in sweatpants. I hate to out us all, because I've also joked that, but I mean,
you like to look nice.
Yeah. Everyone I know looks like they might as well be going to a fancy dinner.
A fancy thumbs up. But is that true though, as far as kind of shedding away some of the things that you need to do for camera? Is that a big part of it and a big relief?
It is. And, you know, when I started doing it, I think I was less conscious, but still a little conscious, because I was looking around at all of these heroes of mine who have been doing it forever. You know, when, like, being friends with someone like Lorraine Newman, you know, she does a ton of kids' voices on cartoons. And I feel like she, like, you know, put her arm around my shoulder and was like, you're going to be grateful you have these voiceover jobs when you're 60. You know, like,
no joke.
So that, I think that feels really good. That being said, I'm not, you know, a prolific voiceover actor like someone like her, or like someone like, you know, Tara Strong, or somebody who's just, it does everything all the time, is always working. Because you know what? I'm a jack of all trades, master of none. Why not Janet? Why Tara not Strong. Janet? She's producing a comedy festival. She doesn't have time to audition right now. Why not Janet?
Well, that too.
Yeah.
I just found out about Tara Strong. Whose voice did she do that I just saw?
She does a voice on Loki. She does like an animated clock voice.
Oh, that's what it was.
Loki. Yeah.
That's what I had just looked up. You're totally right. And then I realized that she's, you know, this.
And she does a voice in legend. And she does a voice in Spirited Away. So not to worry. She does a voice in Spirited Away. Yeah, she's the baby.
Oh my God.
Isn't that funny?
I'm not ready to talk about that yet.
Great. I like that you said that.
You
really said that in a too soon kind of way. Like, I'm not ready. I'm afraid I'm not ready to talk about that. I'm not emotionally ready to talk about that yet.
When does your podcast, do you say, just launched the first couple of episodes?
Mm-hmm. It launched last Tuesday. Today is the, whenever we're recording this, I don't know if you want people, if that's going to ruin the magic.
It'll be a couple of weeks old, I think. This will come out in a couple.
So mid-June. We launched the podcast in mid-June, and we drop every week. The only reason that we have three out now is that we did, you know, sort of a bonus on our opening week and dropped another one on Friday. But in general, every Tuesday.
That's great. I bet that's so much fun.
I love it. Listen,
and I'm sure people are going
to
love it.
Super fans from other communities. We want to have them come in and talk about what it means to them. So you have time to become an expert in, you know, in that world. And then you can come and talk about why you like it.
I mean, I guess we can go ahead and start talking about Spirited Away a little bit, because my background with anime was not strong at all. I didn't ever watch any of it, didn't ever read any of the comics, and it's just not something I was ever. I think maybe I was a little too old.
Well,
it came around.
I was gonna say that the same is true for me, in the sense that, like, no one was telling me about anime being, I knew it existed because I lived in San Francisco. And when you go to, you know, spend time in Japantown, as I did, because I worked right near there, I would always go into these, like, I'm sure I'm going to butcher this word, but Kinokuniya, the Japanese bookstores, and they have, you know, manga, and they have, like, anime that you could buy on a DVD. But that seemed like something that people who knew about it already knew everything about it and it belonged to them. Right. And no one was saying, like, come over to my house and let's watch this show.
Yeah.
And so, because it didn't become as widely available until much later, I think you're right. I think there are people younger than us who were right there for, like, Crunchyroll, which, you know, is streaming and, like, is just all kinds of exposure to anime. And then I waffle between saying anime and anime, depending on, like, how seasoned the person is I'm talking to. I feel like I have to say it the right way. It's like going and being like, I would like to order an enchilada and two tacos.
Where do I fall on the seasoning scale?
Zero. You fall.
You said it both ways.
Zero. Yeah. I'm saying it anime for you, and then for any listener who is seasoned, I am also, I want to make sure they know it's like a secret word, only slightly different.
Yeah, because I'm a zero, you would say anime, and I'm like, what the fuck does she keep
saying?
Also, I don't even know what that word is.
To quote Brian Konietzko, one of the creators of Avatar, as he's sort of talking about their influence and vice versa, he pointed out, I mean, it's just short for animation. Like, they're the same thing. It's really okay. So there's tons of stuff that I didn't get, that I still haven't seen, because now the library of options, even just on Netflix alone, is just endless. There are people who are American, who only watch anime. And when I go to conventions that are heavily on that side, like, rather than on the kind of pop culture, like, oh, look, there's an actor from Guardians of the Galaxy, too. Like, that's not, I always feel, like, wildly intimidated, because there's always a ton of cosplay that I just don't recognize. And I have to be like, tell me what you're dressed as. And you can see the look of disappointment cross over their eyes. Like, oh, I thought you were cool enough to know what this was, Janet.
Thanks
a lot for not knowing, you
more
know.
Pressure.
These movies are sort of the most accessible. To me, it's true for a lot of people. That's the first exposure to what you consider Miyazaki is, like, the first, you know, anime. I really can't decide. It's terrible. I'm gonna say anime. That many people ever saw, because it was, you know, Spirited Away in particular was, you know, an Academy Award winner, and it was it did very, very well worldwide, and so I think it was kind of a gateway. Whereas, like, Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra are kind of a gateway animation to anime for some people.
Right.
So is, and for much longer, and deservedly so, is Miyazaki.
Yeah. The other thing that happened too was, you know, my adopted daughter, Ruby.
I was going to say, how are you feeling about her being the right age to watch something like this?
I'll get to that in a second. This is,
I'm not ready to talk about that yet.
Janet, by the way, just fully put her hand in front of the camera. in a stop in the name of love fashion.
That's right.
So the reason I said my adopted daughter Ruby, because I'm not like Royal Tannenbaum, and like that's how I introduce her to people, but it's pertinent to the story. So when we adopted her, we went out to where we adopted her from, and there's this process of getting to know birth mom, and so we're getting to know I'm not going to say her name just because I want to protect her identity and stuff, but we were getting to know her, and she's this kid, you know, who's giving us a child.
Yeah.
And very young, and was way, way, way into anime. It was one of her passions. And I didn't know anything about it. And so you're in a situation where you're trying to connect a little bit. And because you're also, even though they've decided, you also always feel like you're sort of auditioning to be like, you know, I'm going to be a good dad and stuff like that. And so I was sort of not faking interest, but like, oh yeah, that sounds so cool, you know, like blah, 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 tell me about it.
Yeah.
And through those conversations, it really became clear what it meant to her. And it wasn't just these cartoons that she was watching.
Right.
And I realized for the first time speaking to her how much meat on the bone there was, because she was really into it and really got into telling me about how it's not like what you might think it is.
Right.
And so flash forward to a year ago, now that Ruby is, she's almost six, and at the time, like, five-ish, getting to the point where she can watch some of the stuff, I thought, you know what, this is, I think, in a way, sort of honoring the birth mom to try and turn Ruby onto some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And hopefully they will meet one day and they can have, you know, something sort of in common like this. And so we watched My Neighbor Totoro.
Sure.
To start her out. And Emily and I and Ruby watched it. And we were all just like completely charmed and entranced by how wonderful that movie is.
Yeah.
And got her a Totoro stuffy, a lovey, and she sleeps with it. And
cute.
It's just, it was so wonderful. And then moved on to Spirited Away, which for her age was a little bit more intense.
It's scary.
It is scary,
yeah.
Isn't it? All right.
Yeah,
I was going to ask
scary.
If I'm wrong.
It is scary.
I mean, she was fine. She's always been able to separate fact from fiction. Mm-hmm. And if she gets a little scared in a thing, she'll just like snuggle up a little tighter. But it never freaks her out later. She never has nightmares.
Okay.
She's always been able to punch above her class,
okay.
Movie-wise.
Then you got to start watching The Last Airbender with her. Because if she was fine with Spirited Away, she is going to be totally fine with The Last Airbender, and it is so adorable. It's just wonderful. And
well, I want to watch Korra too, yeah. So I can tell.
Well, yeah, but you got to watch them in order. And Korra is scarier, so she can age up into Korra.
So you need to watch Airbender before Korra.
Many people don't. No, you don't have to watch them in that order to get it at all. There are definitely people who watched Korra first and then who watched The Last Airbender. I'm sure there are Last Airbender fans who are like, I can't believe you just said that, Janet. But from Mike and Brian's own lips.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely, you can watch one before the other. That being said, certainly chronologically, like The Last Airbender takes place 70 years before The Legend of Korra. So there are absolutely, there's a value inherent to watching The Last Airbender first. And it's just better for younger kids. I mean, I think there are people who bring up their kids who are like 4 and they say she's obsessed with Korra. And in my mind, I'm like, I would not have been able to handle The Legend of Korra when I was 4. I mean, I couldn't handle, you know, Bambi when I was 4. So
I'm trying. Oh,
I could barely handle it now.
Yeah, she has a hard time with all those Disney movies because she's like, why is someone's always fucking dying?
I know.
In these movies, and she gets really upset.
I would encourage you to tell her she should not be saying, why is someone always fucking dying with that much vehemence in public? In public, people are going to think that's a little weird.
Maybe so. I'm trying to watch your Korra show, though, and you're pushing me away from it.
I'm pushing you away because...
Why not, Janet?
Because you will not regret watching The Last Airbender first.
Okay, all right.
You won't regret it. And it flies by. And it's almost sad how fast it flies by because it's so good.
I just realized I have my notes on my phone for this, so I'm going to email those while we keep talking.
Okay.
For Spirited Away.
I'm stuck on the idea and how charmed I am by the idea of you, you know, still feeling like you wanted to impress the mother, Ruby's mom. I think that's so lovely. But I was sort of imagining you having, like, you're like, being like, let's talk more about Enemy. Here, hold this baseball mitt. grab this tiara. This is a princess tiara, child size. Hold on to that for a second. Like, how else are you trying to, you know, how does one, other than just to try to telegraph as many ways as possible what a great person you are, like, that's such a specific experience that we don't hear about very often. You know, the experience, I mean, surely, right? There's the experience, I'm not making you talk about it, but the experience of your, I'm going to be adopting your child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very intense.
And here's how I want you to feel about that and feel about me is very intense.
It is very intense. One of these days I'm going to do, I don't know if it's, would be on Stuff You Should Know, because we may do a show on adoption, but I'd probably refrain from getting super personal there.
Sure.
But at some point I feel like I want to, like, talk about that a lot, like to the people in the internet.
Uh-huh. Most impersonal way.
I do, because it's a great story.
I have got to share it with nameless, faceless strangers.
Well, for the reason why is not to do anything for me, but I think that there's so much. I think so many people are scared of something like adoption because it's super, super fucking scary.
Yeah.
That they might shy away from it. And I think more people need to tell their story because it is fraught with many, many complications.
Yeah.
But it's worth it because, you know.
And I would say, you know, I'm speaking directly out of, to quote Ira Glass, Modern Jackass magazine. But I feel like as people as more and more people of this generation, of future generations, wait to have kids, perhaps adoption will become even more prolific just because
they're
faced
with that.
It's just, it's a better choice for all kinds of reasons within the context of like, well, I'm 48 and I've decided that it's really important to me to be a mom. You know, how, what's that going to look like? The more that's out there supporting that as a viable choice, if, you know, if that's right for somebody, the more, the better. I mean,
Yeah, totally. I love it. Maybe I'll do that one day.
Share it with the internet. It's not even a person.
So when we, I'd heard a lot about, I'd heard a lot about Spirited Away, obviously, because it's just, it was such a huge movie and a big award winner. And what are you drinking? What is that?
I'm sorry to say it's a matcha. It's an iced matcha latte.
That's all right.
But it's also
Did you just say that in a dumbed down way for me? How's it really pronounced?
Matcha latte. Ugh.
So Spirited Away is something I knew about because I mean, even though I wasn't a fan, you can't be just a fan of movies and watch the Oscars and stuff like that and not know about it.
Yeah.
But it was always in that category of like, oh, I'm not into anime, so I'm not going to watch that, like a dummy.
Right.
Like what a closed-minded way to think. And when we finally watched it, I didn't know what to expect because Totoro was so, just such a simple story and so lovely. And Spirited Away was just so like druggy, mind-bending.
Right,
and,
right.
And out there and grotesque and scary and... I was just like, what the, at times I was like, what am I watching?
Yes.
This is,
yeah.
Like, it blew me away.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons that I am so fascinated by it and why I think it's so interesting to talk about because this is a very, very bad comparison. So I probably shouldn't even be doing it.
Okay.
But you know how, like, there are, like, this is a very bad example. And it's, of course, I'm like, I'm whitewashing everything and Americanizing it. But because I'm American, bear with me. Radiohead is not a band I would have ever thought would have become a huge band all over the world.
Yeah,
because,
sure.
You know, Tom York is interested in making more, like his music was just becoming more and more experimental. And the more experimental became, and the less sort of mass appeal you would think it had, their star continued to rise. And that's not always the case. Because, you know, there's all you can snob out in pop culture and go like, oh, well, the, you know, a lot of the time really popular stuff is not necessarily great because it's been watered down or it's doesn't have as unique a voice or whatever. And so the fact that something like this crossed so many cultures and was beloved to so many people in so many different age groups and is still so strange, I think is really cool and worth noting, you know?
I think that's a great comparison, actually.
Oh, okay. Well.
That's not bad.
Good.
I love radio.
The two white people agree!
It's an internet first. Yeah, I mean, it. I think as Emily and I were both watching it, of course, with Ruby, we were both a little bit not thinking, like, should we turn this off? Because she was really loving it. But I think we were just, I didn't know it was so kind of batshit crazy
until
we started getting into it and it's one of those that I watched it again like just finished right before I recorded with Hodgman again for the second time and I know it's a movie I'll revisit because it's one that I know you could probably see 20 times and just visually still find new things that just blow your mind somewhere in the frame
absolutely and I will say I mean that's the feeling that I have watching it is it taps so quickly into the being a kid and feeling out of your element somewhere, even if it's the everything I say is so American, even if it's the mall, like a kid getting lost in the mall. But, you know, just that feeling of homesickness. I mean, I felt it activates my feeling of homesickness immediately because it's so it is so strange and she's transported so quickly and she's so adorable and the sense of like loneliness of feeling like I don't have anything to hang on to. I've got no sort of touchstone. I don't know what's happening to me. For it doesn't pull its punches on that, to be sure. And I completely understand why you'd be watching it with Ruby and going like, sort of constantly just then watch it, realize you're, oh, I'm just watching her. I'm not even watching the screen. I just want to make sure however she's responding to this. Because I promise you, if I was 4, 5, 6, 7, possibly 8, 9, 10, there were so many movies that my dad thought I was ready for that he would have to turn off because I would just be sobbing, sobbing. And it's those frickin' mirror neurons. Like when when a child would be afraid in a moment in a movie, or even an adult, I would just be racked with like fear and sadness, and I would have to take a break. It would be like, okay, Jay, do you want it now? Here are the categories. Do you want to stop watching it and never come back to it?
Right.
Do you want to keep watching it and power through the emotional breakdown you're having?
Yeah, yeah.
Or do you want to, maybe we just take a break? Why don't we stop playing it and then we'll come back to it? I had to do that with The Life of Pi, like the year that came out. I knew I couldn't see it in the theater. I was like, nope, not going to see it in the theater.
An adult.
Finally got around to it. And I was like, I got, you know, 40 minutes in and I was crying so hard that I was like, I'm going to have to walk away from this.
Yeah,
might go get a cup of tea, like get myself back together. I know I'm going to finish it, but I cannot do it in one sitting. And this absolutely would have been the case for me. I would have, the minute she's scared the first time and starts crying, I would have been like, okay, why don't we stop this? Why don't we go for a bike ride? And then we'll come back and we'll be ready. We'll be stronger and tougher. We'll have processed the first few minutes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, the good thing about kids, or at least in my experience with Ruby, is that they're so just brutally honest. And like, she'll let us know, first of all, we don't even have to check in. And also, like, just the little things that you find a 5.5-year-old saying, watching a movie like Spirited Away along the way.
Yeah.
You know, the running commentary, which is...
Oh, I wish I could have heard it.
It's the sweetest thing because it's the basest, most honest take on something.
Yeah.
Through those little eyes. Like, it really helps you point... Because it can seem like a convoluted story when you read a plot summary of it. It sounds batshit
bonkers,
crazy and hard to follow. And it is bonkers.
And as, like you said, as you're watching it, you're going like, I am so engrossed in this. But if you asked me, what is this movie about?
Right.
I would give the most cursory answer, knowing it was a waste of time because no one will get the sense of what it is just by saying like, a little girl gets lost in a mystical bathhouse. Like,
that,
it's over. You can't talk about it, you know?
But it is about like, it's one of those movies that an adult can go and research afterward, which is what I did. What's it about?
Yeah.
And there are all these.
I know. I'm excited to talk about those themes because I, too, had to be like, okay.
Yeah. I had to look it
I
up.
Know I'm missing stuff. I was that feeling. And even that is a little kid feeling, right? Of being like, I know this represents something specific and I can't eyeball it and say, well, clearly that's the difference between the working class and capital. Like you might be able to fudge it.
Little bit of the stuff is sort of obvious, but it's a movie that you can research and dive into. But the beauty of it is it's also a movie that can exist in so simplistically for a 5.5-year-old.
Absolutely.
And she's scared. She wants her parents.
Yeah.
She loves Haku.
Yeah.
We all love Haku.
We all love Haku. He's a dreamboat, first of all.
I think
we
all need
him. Do I love him or be him? I'm not sure. Do we have to choose? No.
A handsome little Japanese dragon boy in her life to take
care
of things.
That's
for
right.
Us.
Oh, he's such what a splendid dragon he becomes.
Yeah, very splendid dragon. But let's talk about some of those themes because I did some research and you know some of the more obvious things is the class distinction and like you know obviously these parents literally become pigs.
Yeah.
After they drive up in their Audi and the
it
dad
takes it
talks
easy
about
on you at first. You're like
cash and credit cards and. You know, it's pretty black and white, but as the movie goes on, there's so much going on that I found myself wondering, all right, the three green heads, one of them has a full mustache and the other two do not.
like you were in an escape
what
room.
What does that mean?
You're like, okay, one of these mustaches is different. If I activate that one, I will get out of the escape room faster.
I'm serious, though.
No, it's true. It's true.
It makes you sort of rethink everything, which is a testament to it, I think.
Absolutely.
What other themes have you found, Janet? I was setting you up to go, well, there's also...
And who could forget, she said, hope holding up her face. Well, I think another really big one is no face, right? Like wondering, like trying to understand, especially from, you know, the sense you get of that character before he kind of transforms and trying to sort of understand like, okay, is he something. It feels like he's mirroring his environment, but uh-huh. is that a very specific reference, or is it just the sort of idea of how malleable we all are and how we need, right. you know, we do need that touchstone. We do need that guide who is going to remind us, you know, who we are or what the best version of ourselves might be. Which actually I don't know if that's like fully answered. I think, I mean, it talks about the idea of him being, you know, like reflecting the characters who surround him, like, and then becoming the things you consume, which makes mm-hmm. you become even more of the thing that you've consumed. Like if you sort of, it becomes this kind of cycle. But that's such an interesting character. And I will also say that that is a oft cosplayed character, because when you look really? At the characters in Spirited Away, you're like, ooh, a lot of these would be a real challenge to right. Pull off and pay homage to.
Yeah,
if you're like trying to get around in a convention center, you put on your black cloak and you paint a beautiful no face mask. You have anonymity and mm-hmm. you know, provided you're not eating people, you stay pretty small and you can navigate yourself across the con floor.
Yeah, and what was the magic trick that Miyazaki uses to somehow get different emotions out of no face?
Oh, I know.
And almost seemingly expression, but it doesn't yeah. change.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all in our own heads as a viewer, I think.
Yeah, and I realized that I was leaning forward so hard
yeah.
when he's just going, like you really are like, I'm with you. Okay, I'm right here. Like, I'm trying to understand. I want to understand that could have such a strong effect and be so simple. You could say that for the whole movie, but that's definitely an example of like, oh, how do I help you? What do you need from me? You know?
There's a lot of that in this movie, I think, because you identify so strongly with all of the characters to want to jump through the screen and lend a hand.
Yeah.
And it's hard as a person of my age coming into this stuff for the first time, I can't not compare it to Disney and sort
of. I think that's totally fair. Well, look, Disney had it was like Pixar who kind of
right
helped shepherd in the movie on the American side. So were you thinking of the brooms and the little set characters?
Well, I just mean sort of period. It, like
yeah.
just the different animation styles, the fact that there is, and you know, I love the Disney stuff. I love the Pixar stuff, and they do have substance. But there's so much more meat on the bone with this stuff than your typical Disney thing. And I think part of that is all the symbolism that you may not quite have with the Disney movies. Part of it is it's not wall-to-wall pop music.
You don't know to look for the hidden penises in The Little Mermaid.
And I love the music of all. I mean, I can listen to, and now I have to, and have enjoyed listening to Frozen and Frozen 2 and what's the one on the island with the girl that was so great? Moana.
Moana, yeah.
Like, I love all those songs, but there was something really refreshing about seeing a movie like this with just that wonderful score and not feeling like they're trying to sell a soundtrack right. on top of it.
Well, it's funny because there are elements of it. I brought up the brooms from Fantasia with the little soot creatures. Because there are some sort of like, you could compare some of it to Fantasia, which is, you know, not something that Disney continuously repeated, but it was this very strange, special experiment that did have all of these different like styles and all of these, and was, you know, so largely based in the music and, I mean, it was entirely based in the music and some, you know, more mature sort of themes.
Did Miyazaki see that, I wonder?
I'm sure he did. I have absolutely. Again, Modern Jackass Magazine. Do not know what I'm talking about. It seems unlikely that he wouldn't have been exposed to that. But I mean, that's a thing where it's like, well, if that was a mild influence or inspiration, you've taken it to the nth level and so far out, you know, surpassed whatever your influence was profoundly. And I realize also, by the way, that I was lying. This was not the first anime that I ever saw. I know that there's something else that I saw in addition to having seen something called Barefoot Gen, which is anime that I watched in an ethics in film class when I was in college. Wow. And it is a horrifying heartbreaking, shattering, as it should be, anime about a little boy and the bombings in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it is fucking horrible.
Yeah.
It will haunt you forever. There are things in that movie I can't unsee, and it is chilling, and it was definitely something that, you know, it's so well done, but boy, is it, I mean, it's like, you know, the only comparison is The Wall, I guess, you know, in that it's just, you're like, oh, yes, the things that can be achieved through anime in terms of depicting human horrors that we put each other through, no bounds. So if anybody wants to see something that will shatter their soul and make them never question whether Americans should be hated by other countries for decisions they've made through time, it's really something. It's really something.
Well, anime definitely feels like it's much more willing to walk through the door of making a movie that really teaches kids something much more deeply than sort of the Disney stuff. I mean, there were plenty of lessons. Every Disney movie has its lesson. But I don't think they're dumbed down. They're just very sort of down here and basic.
Oh, I can't wait to have this conversation after you've watched The Last Airbender, because...
You're twirling your hair.
Guess what? You will not say that about those.
Oh, okay.
You will be like, wow, I can't believe Ruby loved it for this. But the whole time during that episode, I kept thinking, God, this is so, you know, there's some deep, deep stuff in there.
I guess one of the big themes is that I sort of talked about the parents feeding their faces, and there's so much grotesque sort of, what was it called? The stink?
The stink spirit. There's so much overconsumption and purging. Yeah. We're so, the theme of regurgitation and like expellation, I guess, that is so, I mean, it just, that happens over and over and over.
Yeah, there's a lot of puking.
Like the idea of being like, I'm going to sit down with a, you know, bag of popcorn and some Snickers and just, you know.
It'll drive you toward vegetarianism.
It will. It will.
I don't know if that was any of the point of it. I love just that whole first bathing sequence from the moment it started to the moment it ended was just so fucking weird and amazing.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to figure out as a first time watcher, like, what even is, what is going on?
Yeah.
At this bathhouse.
I know.
And like, I think you spend most of the movie trying to figure this out, and it, and you think, boy, this is nuts. And that's in the first third-ish of the movie.
Yeah.
And it just gets crazier and crazier.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't, it's so unapologetically bizarre, and it's not like things get wrapped up in a way that, that, like using just one, this as one example, you know, the main character, Yubaba, right, is, or Yubaba, I don't want to say that wrong, so I hope
Yubaba.
That you can edit that out.
No, I'm leaving.
Yeah, no, yeah, I beg you. I beg you. I don't need the hate mail. I do not need the hate mail. Yeah, Yubaba, thank you. But the fact that she has, we find out, you know, towards the end of the movie, well, not really, I mean, maybe it's halfway through, but that she apparently has a twin sister. And
that's
her
the last third, yeah.
Yeah, and a twin sister, Zaniba, and then when we meet, we go to and then Zaniba says, it has this wonderful, she has this, they all have this kind of wonderful experience with her.
Yeah.
And
she's
she
a
says,
sweet
please
granny.
call me granny.
Yeah.
And then when Sen goes back to see Yubaba, she calls her granny.
Yeah.
And that's
granny.
And that's right at the end. And you're and you're like, oh, wait a minute. And but nothing is, that's it. That's your experience of is she one and the same?
Right.
Is there's nothing helping you along other than that she calls her granny, and then you sort of project back and go, well, Yubaba does fly away every day. Where is she going?
I need a 12-year-old to explain it to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for real.
Yeah. But I mean, but that's the other idea, is like, there's no one is ever any one thing. And I mean, as much as you would think, oh, this person stands for this, so this person represents this, everyone's constantly transforming. People have more than one name, you know, so there's like, there's as much transformative stuff that just keeps happening over and over. as there is puking.
Yeah.
As there is barfing out sludge.
In my research, I did find that shape-shifting is such a big thing in Japanese culture. So, I mean, this movie is just full of it, like things morphing into different things all over the place.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen a movie with so many original-looking creatures. It's, you know, when you're used to, when you're raised in America and you've seen only Disney, you see kids and adults and like a talking animal, a talking parrot or something.
Right, right.
And that's sort of the extent of it. Maybe some of them get a little more creative than that, but like nothing that comes close to touching this.
And also, why, when you're watching it, why are some people presenting as human? Why are why are some creatures sort of human? What, you know, and then other
the
creatures look
baby.
Nothing like them. The big giant baby, you know, some things are have almost no shape at all and are just totally just sort of shadows with like a little bit of a hint of maybe two eyes. And then some are fully articulated and have giant bushy mustaches and multiple arms and little claw nails. And they're the good ones.
Right.
They're the kind-hearted ones.
Or they're the tiny little black little
I know,
dust
those little soot guys are so cute.
Yeah, little city dust guys.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's so many little things about the movie that make it stand out above the rest. Like one of my favorite sequences at the end when she's taking the train with No Face. Oh. And instead of just having the train on the tracks, the tracks are underwater.
Yeah.
And that just like all of a sudden everything is reflected. And it's just a little decision like that where, you know, whereas it could have just been a train track is just, it's amazing.
Yeah. And those, all the backdrop painting is just so stunning. I mean, it hurts your heart how beautiful some of those renderings are. And, you know, I had, there are these moments where I'd be like, oh, I'm going to look away to, you know, pick up my glass of water.
I know.
And then
miss?
I would go, what? Wait. And then you would, and then I would rewind. And it was like on that, especially specifically on the train, it was like, oh, the blank space, quotey quotes, that they're going through. You don't want to miss that because there's this sort of open landscape that's just, might as well be an abstract painting, but it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful to the eye.
Yeah, I mean, the whole third act is just full of so much emotion and heart. I think there's a lot of like sort of figuring it out of the story and a lot of fear of what's going on through the first two thirds. And then that last third, it really goes into much more as far as if you're used to watching Disney and more traditionally able to digest it thing.
Like linear, even. It's just like a sense of what is a standard linear storytelling style.
Or... sort of, yeah. And then, like, oh my God, when she's flying with Haku and she remembers the story about the shoe. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And he and she remembers that he was the spirit of the river, and he changes back. It's just like the music's swelling, and
I'm choked up just thinking about it.
I know. I'm like crying in my house on a Wednesday at noon, about to record with Hodgman, and I'm finishing up that movie. I'm like, I got to pull it together.
Yeah.
And you know, Ruby's like, why are you guys crying? Like, well, this is very sad. He remembers he was a river, and she's like, but that's happy, and I'm like, oh. Kids.
I know.
So simple.
Yeah. It really acted. That was another thing that I was not expecting was, and this is, you know, perhaps speaking of going deeper than necessary for Movie Crush, but I'm so used to crying during movies. It's a non-issue. I mean, that's expected. But I had the feeling that for those of you who have experienced a loss that has resulted in tremendous grief of some kind, I had that, like, you can't take a deep enough breath kind of feeling where grief is like, oh, I don't have lungs anymore, only grief. And it just, there's a really scary out of control feeling about grief sometimes and crying and feeling like, you know, you really understand why there are cultures that have keening and that wail and that is a necessary part of of grieving, because they're speaking of regurgitating.
Right.
There is a sense of needing to get something foreign that's lodged inside of you out so that you can continue to be a person and survive. Uh-huh. And that started bubbling up in me.
Wow.
And I was so unprepared for it. And it, like everything with this movie, not like everything, you can definitely draw, yeah, as we said, we're identifying certain themes. But at the same time, it's just abstract enough that you can't necessarily, you don't have to necessarily point to any one thing, because it's just this, feelings are just being washed over you, and the music and the visuals and the sense of emotion, even not expressed through the specific experience of a character, that I was like, I couldn't necessarily say, you know, because Brandon was like, oh no, like, oh, this has become something else now for you.
Right.
And yeah. Sort of like, what was there a trigger? And I was like, no, I don't know. It was almost like a sneeze. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, this is just happening to me. It's just happening. And I can't say, it was that moment. This moment reminded me of my mom dying. Like, not at all.
But
it had just been, it was just down there. It was like, I'm ready. Here I come. Guess what?
I know.
And I really was like, I gotta get this under control. Like, I have to sort of tell myself, like, you can breathe.
Yeah.
You can breathe. You know, it's okay to have this feeling. It feels
eventually.
Good. Absolutely. I mean, it always feels better, like throwing up.
Yeah.
The moment when the nausea stops and you realize that your body feels amazing from going from feeling so intensely difficult on some level that's its own high of just like, oh, I feel so much better. This is amazing. Yes.
Yeah, I've had those moments through movies specifically where I don't even know, and if it, like you were saying, if it was something specific that was inside me that I clearly needed to get out, but I wasn't in touch with, but where I had found myself just inconsolable and just in a different state of upset than I'd ever been at the end of a movie or something. And it happened a couple of years ago, and I can't even remember the movie, so like that's not even the important part.
Right.
It's this literal physical reaction that happens.
Yeah.
Like we said, there are no lungs anymore.
it's
like
crazy.
Your throat closes, and it's a very cathartic feeling. I always wondered if like primal scream therapy would be something that would benefit me.
I mean, I get it. There are like creepy 70s therapy that you see in like cult documentaries.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to say, I'm like, now this I don't have a problem with. It's like, well, wait a minute, that's the thing that most people are pointing to going like, well, that's wrong. And I'm like,
it looks very healing, actually.
Hold on, though. Exactly.
Oh, goodness. I'm surprised Disney didn't try to rip this off at some point, not this movie specifically, but after Spirited Away, I'm surprised they didn't say, well, let's try our hand at anime.
Right.
Or maybe they did and I wasn't aware of it. I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like Big Hero 6 sort of has, again, now I'm sort of conflating Pixar and Disney, and that's not fair to Pixar in a sense. It's not fair to either. Look, it's not fair to either. I feel the same way about Disney stuff as you do. And
I still want to do voice work for both.
I am available, and I do. Right. And I am a princess. I'm a princess. No, I mean, it's just a different, the experience that you expect to have is different. And that's not to say that there aren't Disney movies that have had really lasting impacts on me and that I absolutely cherish and adore. To some degree, there is a sense of, I don't want to fetishize the otherness of being from a different culture, but the experience of watching, you know, I mean, even like something like Aladdin is still told through the lens of American storytelling. Like, that's okay, this is how we understand, this is the Disney way of understanding this thing that, you know, is now like problematic yet also very beloved and important for other reasons to people, and I get all of that, but I think there's, you know, there's just something to be said for, like, we should all be so lucky as to have the opportunity to see art from all over the world. That just feels really important, and it might connect you with something inside yourself that you haven't had access to through art, because some way in which you've digested it, like, there, it hasn't touched a certain part, you know, that maybe something else will.
Yeah, I mean, anytime I'm traveling or here in Atlanta at the High Museum, anytime I see like something, you know, the Art of Zimbabwe coming for 2 weeks to whatever, I always try and go, because, you know, And a lot of times it's not something that resonates with me, but sometimes it is.
Yeah.
But it's just like, well, you know, now I know what that's like.
Yeah.
Now I know what that country is putting out there.
Absolutely. And that definitely goes, I think, for, I mean, unsurprisingly, things that maybe would be more accessible or thought of as children's entertainment on some level, if mm-hmm. they are like Miyazaki, or if they are like, you know, Hungarian, like, puppetry, or I mean, puppetry is right. a great example. Speaking of the Center for Puppetry, you see the way all these different cultures handle the same idea of like a doll that's moving mm-hmm. on behalf of a person, like it has some sort of human traits and characteristics. It's amazing what you find is universal, and then also those moments that you feel like, oh, I'm seeing something that comes from some totally other place in terms right. of, you know, like literally and metaphorically. And it's exciting. And it can be uncomfortable.
Yeah. And it doesn't even have to be another culture or country. Sometimes it can just be something, and this is a little off track, but it can be something that you just never previously were turned on to.
100%. Yeah.
Maybe top 2-3 museum exhibits I've ever seen was the Alexander McQueen one in New York, that I was like, I don't know anything about fashion and high fashion and couture, and I know nothing about that stuff. So I go to the show and I'm just like blown away.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'm not all of a sudden some huge fashion guy, but I wanted to watch the documentary about this guy, and I wanted to know more about his life. And it's like, you know, Emily and I went to the opera once in L.A. We'd never been to the opera. Turns out we don't like the opera.
Uh-huh. Fair enough. Fair enough.
But you gotta try that shit.
Yeah. I got a couple operas I bet you would like.
Oh, yeah?
I don't mind being like a weird opera dealer all of a sudden. I got a couple of operas I think you might like.
We went to see La Boheme that Baz Luhrmann put on stage in L.A. when I lived there.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be the one. It's Baz Luhrmann. It's opera. We just couldn't get into it.
There's a German opera company that did a version of the Magic Flute that was mm-hmm. like Tim Burton meets the 1920s meets opera.
Oh, wow.
They used a bunch of film projection and mm-hmm. And it's just strange and dark and unlike anything I had ever seen before. And I was like, oh, I love opera. And then I went and saw something more conventional. I was like, oh, no, I appreciate opera. I appreciate opera. I just love that opera.
Then your dad comes
in. Told in that specific way.
And says, Janet, do you need to take a little break? Do you need to finish this later? Do you want to power through?
Oh, that's what intermissions are for. Got it. Got it. Got it. Got it.
It's your opportunity to leave with grace.
Yeah. It's your opportunity to realize you left the stove on. And that's fine.
Well, just to wrap up Spirited Away, I think the ending with, it kind of struck me today, like the supposed goal is for her to be reunited with her parents, but it's not one that if you grew up on Disney, you're conditioned that is like the end all be all.
Yes,
like as a viewer, you're not like, you're kind of like, do you really want her to go back to her parents?
A little bit. The movie,
but you know, she should.
Yeah. And it pays off in exactly that way. Like its ending is so abrupt. You don't go
it
to see
where
she lives.
It started very quickly, and
you know?
It ends very quickly.
You're like, I don't know where Chihiro is going to live. They're going to see their new home. I feel sorry for her that she is back with the parents that were greedy enough that they, I mean, because at the end of the day, they were the ones who made the decision to, you know, we don't have an understanding of them having been magicked into gorging themselves on this food.
Right.
That seems to be a decision that they fully made on their own. And it's so funny. Like Michael Chiklis just has one of those voices that I just, you know, immediately know it's him. And
oh,
I was like,
dad.
Oh, that's Chiklis. That is full on Chiklis. Like they really did it. Cause they picked this like just very like, hey, I'm just a regular guy, you know, voice as his. And then I had to look up that it was Lauren Holly who did the female voice because it wasn't quite as iconic sounding.
Oh, was
but,
it?
Yeah. And Suzanne Plochette is
I saw that.
Yeah.
Legend.
Which is,
great.
Like you have to smoke a lifetime. She really devoted a lifetime of smoking to that role with her incredibly raspy voice. But of course, it was perfect. But yeah, she comes back and you really have a sense of like, oh, yeah, the regular world. Cool, cool, cool.
Right.
And you know, as she's going through the, and then they're like, well, you're going to be going to a new school. And she's like, I think it'll be okay. Credits. Like,
it's just immediately over. Yeah, not a lot of sentiment attached like you were used to here in the States.
She's feeling emotional, and her mom's like, ugh, stop clinging.
I know.
Like, oh boy, okay.
Yeah, it's like, can we go back to the spirit world, the fantasy life?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of the Goonies effect of, like, the kid has this big adventure and then is reunited with the parents, and then it's kind of like, boy, Adventureland was so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I think you're right. We're conditioned to feel like if it's a movie we think of for young people, there's more a sense of, like, I have to be taken care of all the way through. And part of being taken care of all the way through means that there's something beautiful and wonderful and safe and great about being back with your parents. And
yeah,
I think you wanted the
parents to be different, or, like, if it were here in the United States, the parents would have transformed somehow and been different. And then, you know, but this Miyazaki was just like, nah.
Yeah.
Back to it.
Yeah.
Kid.
They wish they could have eaten more of those beautiful dumplings.
I know. Those dumplings that they eventually probably threw up.
Yeah.
Well, Janet, this was great. I think we were going to record a separate thing to go into the final mini crush. But I think since we're here and we're just chatting.
Yeah.
This is the last Movie Crush episode, officially. You started the show off with show number one.
And everyone was like, oh, you started with Tron.
Maybe.
A show about
I think
some of the best
Tron.
Movies of all time. No, you came around. Well, did you? I don't know. But if I recall correctly, you begrudgingly acknowledged that there was personal history that made my choice.
No, not
fully
at all.
Justifiable.
Have you been hanging on to this for 3.5 years?
I am. This is a reckoning, mister. Okay. This is a reckoning.
No, it's not even about the movies. It's about having these great conversations with people who are friends of mine sometimes, and people who I don't know that I can connect with about movies and art and culture. And you were the first person I had on because it was just a no-brainer for me to have someone on who has done a lot for me in my personal creative life. And I know I've told you that before, but you have always challenged me to do things I didn't think I could do. And I know that will continue through the years with Sketchfest coming back, which I'm so excited about. But I wanted to have you on here as the last guest. And you were actually, the fact you were already scheduled, and then it's kind of been in the back of my head about ending the show. And then it kind of hit me out of the blue. I was like, wait a minute, Janet's coming on. It's like, I think this is it. Like, this is a sign. You'll just bookend it.
And what an honor. I can't believe it.
Thanks for doing that.
That means so much to me. I can't even tell you. That just means the world to me, Chuck. Because I've been wanting to do the show again. And then dumb old Cole, like, became, you know, the guy who comes on the show. It's like, oh, I guess he's going to do it. He's going to talk about defending your life. Great. Now I can't talk about defending your life either. Thanks, Cole. Let's just keep crossing off all my favorite movies. Off the list. No, it really, you know, as you know, we were going to record earlier than this, and my mom passed away, and I was just sort of pulling back, because at any moment I didn't know when that feeling was going to bubble up, and it felt very, very unpredictable, and it felt like a lot to put another person through. If
it's going
to happen,
great podcasting, but I understand.
Now you know you could have had an even juicier episode if we'd done it then, and so I'm really, really glad that it did work out, because I don't know that you would necessarily have thought, you know, oh, right, I, you know, Jan is probably wondering why I didn't follow up with her after her mom died to say, are you ready yet?
Well, I certainly was trying to give you space, and I knew it would come around at some point.
Well, I just, and then too, you know, I just miss you guys. I can't believe how much love I have and such a deep connection I have with friends that I love you guys like you're my next door neighbors, and we've lived next to each other for 10 years. It's so insane how much I would. Yeah. And so, you know, it's very touching to me that you would have me on and have it be the last episode. I thank you. And I'm sorry.
You're welcome, and thank you.
And if you're and if it's and if it feels good and like yes, I was ready to be. You know, it's not like that. Obviously, no one's saying it's not a show that you would have done forever. That someone else was like, we're pulling the plug, buddy. Sorry,
right?
You know, to feel like that's the nice thing. That's sort of representative of one of the nice things about podcasting is that you can go, I think I'm good.
Yeah,
like this was great.
Yeah,
this was great.
Go out on your terms. I'll probably do some episodes here and there when I feel like it.
No, this is the last episode. What are you talking about? Don't undo everything the agent said.
What an asshole. I can't believe I did that. No, I've told people that I will do one-off episodes here and there, but how about this?
Of course.
After every one of those potential last episodes, I will have you on again. And we'll have this moment again. It won't be contrived.
That would mean a lot to me. That, you know what? I'll even watch whatever movie it was that your other guests wanted to talk about.
Okay.
And you just tag me on and we'll just do 1 minute's worth where I tell you my opinion of the movie. And then we spend the rest of the time saying, well,
right.
This is
You're
it.
Wonderful. This is great. What a run. Can you believe it?
So
thank you, Janet Varney. What's the name of your podcast? Where can people find it?
The Avatar podcast is Avatar Braving the Elements. It is available anywhere you get podcasts. It is an iHeartRadio partnered presentation, but you can find it anywhere, Stitcher, Apple, all that good stuff. And it comes out every Tuesday. And I do that again with Dante Bosco. And then obviously the JV Club's been around. Chuck's been on it more than once. I talk to people about their awkward teenage years.
One of my favorite shows.
It's
still.
It's very, very fun. Again, like Movie Crush, it's like, yeah, the premise is we talk about this, but it's really just about getting to know someone and getting a chance to hang out. And then I do an improvised space comedy podcast called Voyage to the Stars with Kirsten Vangsness from Criminal Minds, Felicia Day, Colton Dunn, Steve Berg.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know about this.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, we've just finished recording our third season, but only two seasons, I think, are out. We're on a madcap adventure, a bunch of people thrown together. I am not even a person. I'm an AI on a ship that eventually gets a robot body. and have a bunch of uncomfortable space misadventures that most often result in us accidentally destroying a planet as we try to navigate back to Earth.
I got to check that out.
You should look because it's, of course, a ton of your favorite people are the guests of it, too.
All right, Janet. Well, I can't wait to see you hopefully next January at Sketchfest and hug your neck and get Brandon and Emily and all of us together again.
Yes, please. I need it. My soul needs it.
My soul needs it, too.
And I'm so glad, again, to have been the very, very final episode of Movie Crush. Final episode.
All right. I'm going to let you have the last even word. So go ahead. What's your final word?
Final episode. One word.
Bye, Janet.
Bye.
All right, everybody. That was it. I hope you liked that as much as I did. I had such a good time talking to Janet. She's just, she's the best. I've said it before. I know you're tired of me saying that she's the best, but she really is. If you knew her, you'd say the same thing. So big thanks to Janet for coming back and wrapping up the regular weekly interview editions with me. Thanks to Janet for kicking off the show 3.5 years ago with Tron. And boy, it's been a lot of fun in between. And bookending this with Janet means a lot to me. So big thanks to her. So I hope you all enjoyed it. And I hope you take care of yourselves. This is not the end. Look for episodes here and there, everyone. They'll be coming at you with some regularity. But I love you all, and I thank you all. Look for a very special supersized mini crush coming up soon. As soon as I can lick this COVID and get everybody in the can that I wanted to. And you're really going to enjoy that one. It's a lot of fun. So be well. Take care of yourselves. Get vaxxed. And continue to wear those masks, everyone.
Movie Crush is produced and written by Charles Bryant and Noel Brown. Edited and engineered by Seth Nicholas Johnson and scored by Noel Brown here in our home studio at Ponce de Market, Atlanta, Georgia for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.